From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship at the Reeve Gauche and to the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained and our great friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain, or indeed a pirate, but a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one, and his family all came from Wales as well. For 30 years, I have been lucky enough to travel all over the world as a boring old marketing suit in the sports industry, which included having arguably the best job in the world as head of sponsorship at HSBC. Along that journey, I got to rub shoulders with the good, the bad, and the ugly from the world of sport. And having ditched the pinstripe suit for breeches and the red waistcoat and cutlass that befits a pirate captain, I set out to create this podcast where every fortnight I simply ask my special guests from the world of sport to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. And ahoy there, my hearties. Welcome back on board my pirate ship, the Reeve Gauche, and for another episode of the Captain's Table.
I'm the captain.
My guest this week is a rugby player. A bloody enormous Welsh rugby player, to be precise. Twice a British and Irish Lion in 2009 and 2013, Jamie Roberts also won 94 caps for Wales during what was an illustrious international career. Sucker for punishment that he clearly is, he's still going, currently playing for the Dragons. But he's also played for the Cardiff Blues, Racing Metro, Cambridge University, Harlequins, Bath, and the Stormers. He's basically a rugby tart. And I got to know him on the 2009 Lions Tour to South Africa, where memorably he and Brian O'Driscoll formed one of the most exciting centre partnerships in Lions history. And in 2013, he played a critical part in the 2-1 series win over the bloody Aussies. Like another great Welsh-British Lion, JPR Williams, Jamie is a qualified doctor and has also been trying his hand at broadcasting when he gets time off from his studies. And he's about to become a father, so he's not busy then. I can hear his elephantine footsteps on the gangplank right now. Jamie Roberts, welcome on board the Reeve Gauche to the Captain's Table podcast. Now, Christ, you're a big lad. We may need to get a bigger chair. How are you, buddy?
Very well, mate. Very well. Good to see you again.
Did you have a good Christmas and New Year in these rather confined circumstances?
Oh, it flew by, mate. It flew by. We obviously, as rugby players, you play the festive derbies over Christmas. Geez, Christmas has come and gone pretty quickly this year. Got rid of the decorations last week, and here we are into 2021, man.
Well, it's great to have you on board here. Here we are at Cardiff Dock. I'm going to take your bags amidships by my steward, Paul. As you sort of make yourself home, watch out for the pets on board who will be charging around the ship. We have John the Parrot. Bruce, the ship's dog, he's a feisty Welsh Labrador from Llangollen. And that grey pussycat is Cat, called Cat. Beautiful, but hopelessly scared of mice. So I think you've got a pet, haven't you?
I've got Layla the dog. Mate, I just say, I'm proud you can pronounce Llangollen. It's impressive.
Oh, well, I was practicing. Yeah. Tell me about Layla.
Layla, Cocker Spaniel. She's 2.5. Amazing dog. When we were in Bath, and probably it's a bit of a warm up for having a baby. I'm having my first child in about 5 weeks' time. But yeah, we picked her up from down near in Taunton. And she has been an amazing addition to myself and Nicole. She is like a child. We treat her like a human.
Now, I know that Layla might have been a warm-up, but you can't let your baby sleep in a basket in the kitchen. That doesn't work that way.
Yeah, Layla's going to get very jealous. I'm worried of her getting jealous, actually. the attention. So we're going to have to work it well when our child arrives.
Well, the baby will never notice for the first couple of years, so you just keep going with Layla. That's my my top tip. Jamie, we've been rattling on, haven't even got your drink. Now, usually, pirates and their guests drink rum, but for the regular listeners, all 12 of them of this podcast, they'll know that this is a classy ship. And so the usual tipple of choice is therefore Loch Lomond Scotch Single Malt Whiskey. How will you take yours? Bit of ice, water, splash of ginger ale? What do you need?
Ginger ale, ice, splash of ginger ale, perfect.
Very good. Paul, if you could get that, thank you. Right, enough of this rubbish. Jamie, this podcast is all about finding out about you, the fan of sport, rather than you, the rugby player and the sportsman that you've been for many years for Wales. What was your earliest sporting memory as a young boy growing up in South Wales? Rugby, I assume, but what was the memory? What was the spark that caught it all going?
My earliest memory is probably my dad dropping me down to training on a Saturday morning, and him having to line the back seats of the cars with big towels. You know, we come off absolutely caked in mud, and obviously we wouldn't use the showers at the facility. We trained on an old school pitch through the Welsh language. It was a club rugby. And yeah, just remember boots off, being absolutely caked in mud, soaking wet, and my dad just being more concerned about getting mud on the back seat of the car.
Do you remember what car it was?
Yeah, Toyota. My dad has never driven another car than a Toyota. He's very, very strict on that one.
Well, he probably likes their reliability, I imagine.
Exactly.
And was he? And did you go to sports? Did you go to events? Did you go and watch Wales? Did you watch Cardiff? Did he take you to the sort of the real deal as a kid?
Yeah, he did. And my parents, my brother was 18 months older than me, so we grew up. We were very competitive. And you know, two lads growing up together. It's a perfect, I guess, foundation for every type of sport. And you know, whenever we were together as a family, sport was always involved, whether that was playing cricket, tennis, football, rugby, golf, you name it. It was always, I guess, pitching me. I always had to beat my older brother, whatever that was at. But we used to go to loads of events, obviously the rugby in the then Millennium Stadium. Growing up, you know, I remember the World Cup in 99. I would have been 13 then. But before that, the Arms Park. When it was the old Arms Park, and seeing Wales play. My parents took us to the Grand Prix quite a few times at Silverstone, probably because they got a good deal on the family pass there and they could get kids in relatively cheap. So, but yeah, just sport played a massive part in growing up, and that's not just in rugby. It was any sport, any way you could get the kids expanded energy, especially my brother and I. It was you know, golden ticket really for my parents.
And did you have a football team? Was there some early allegiance with a club, early doors?
I was a glory supporter, mate. Man United, Cantona, Keane, you know, Beckham, all these guys. Yeah, you know, that young United team. I used to collect football stickers. Remember the Premier League football stickers? Those are the things with us growing up on the schoolyard. You know, swapping football stickers as kids. And yeah, Man United was my team, my brothers.
And who is your hero? Who is on the Jamie Robert? I mean, in fact, not just in football, anything. Who are the posters on your wall?
Cantona was one. And funnily enough, I used to play fullback as a kid. And, you know, my dad used to take us down Rodney Parade to support Newport. He was a season ticket holder for a long time. And Percy Montgomery came over and played in Newport at a time when I was kind of really, really getting interested in rugby. And so, yeah, Percy Montgomery and Eric Cantona.
And were you a cricket fan at all? Were you sort of do the sort of traditional rugby and cricket? Did you even fan of cricket?
Yeah, I was a fan. I played as well. I played with Cardiff Cricket Club, played quite a bit for the county, had Welsh trials, didn't get in. I was an opening bowler, fast and wide. but I was doing so much sport during the week, but that was rugby training in the evenings, playing on the weekend for school, and then cricket then on the Sunday, and every night of the week had something, and something had to give. I think I got to about 15 years old and unfortunately I had to choose one or the other, and rugby, I was already in the pathway with rugby with the representative stuff, so I gave up cricket, unfortunately. I'm lucky rugby has worked out quite well, but I left cricket as a kid. I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant sport.
And still watch cricket when you can?
Yeah, not huge amounts. Not huge amounts, but when I can, mate, yeah.
And are you still a Man U supporter? You kept your allegiance ever since?
I'm still a Glory supporter, mate. I've been to Old Trafford a few times. I keep in touch. I don't watch too much football, to be honest. And it's different, isn't it? None of those players are now still playing. I think, you identify with these players when they're young, and then the team completely changes. I could probably only name you three or four players now you play for United.
You've, with your rugby career, have played, I think, in arguably the greatest sporting stadium in the world, in the Principality. But we're both biased and love Wales. But many people say the Principality is right up there. But as a fan of sport, whether it be rugby or other sports, is there another stadium or favourite stadium that you've been to that you go, as a fan, not being on the park, but being in the terraces or on the seats, this is your favourite place to be? Is there someone that's caught your passion?
Yeah, the Stade de France in Paris. I just... There's a romance about that place. I was lucky enough to live in Paris for a few years, built for the 98 World Cup. France won the World Cup in their home country. I just remember the first time going there as a player, just being like, wow, this is just immense, like Colosseum-esque. And then I've been there as a fan when I was living in Paris. And just thinking, it's just an amazing... It's not as intimate as the Millennium, as the Principality Stadium. You know, the fans aren't as close to the pitch, but it just has something special about it.
When you play on a stadium like the Stade de France, which was, as you say, built for the Football World Cup, which they then went on and won on that turf, as a rugby player, so different sport, but you go into that arena, are those ghosts still there? Are you aware that a football team has won a World Cup on that turf? Does that kind of come into your psyche at all?
Definitely, you feel a part of history, and I think connecting with that history is massively important in sport. Not just as a player, but probably more so as a supporter. And that's where affinity for the sport comes from. That's where supporter affinity for their club or country comes from. It's about connecting with history, and certainly as a player, I walk into that stadium and I'm like, there were some amazing teams who've played here and have lifted amazing trophies. You feel a part of that. You feel a part of that story.
And we've just been talking about this off air, that a lot of you rugby players are having to, like sports people all over the world, are having to play sport. Thank goodness you get the chance to ply your trade by carrying on sport for now during the pandemic. But you're playing in front of empty stadium. And I gather, obviously it's really different. You don't need to be Einstein to work that out. But it's fundamentally different for you, the protagonists on the field, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's a different sport. It's a completely different sport. Firstly, I think rugby players pride themselves deep down on being entertainers. And we all have egos to a certain extent that want to be satisfied. Either you make a big tackle or you make a good break, you score a try, and you feel the energy from the crowd. Conversely, when you make mistakes, you got the crowd on your back, you can feel that pressure. And that pressure, for the majority of people, makes people perform. Certainly those who make it to play professional sport, that pressure enables them to go and achieve what they do. So without that, you need a completely different mindset. I found that. At times I struggled with it early on. And different players have approached it in different ways, but it definitely requires a different approach.
And as a fan, going back to being a fan, are you an emotional fan? Would you cry? Have you ever cried watching Wales lose a rugby match or Manchester United, whatever, either in elation or sadness? Or do you tend to take quite a sort of dispassionate view of the action?
I wouldn't say dispassionate. I get involved. I'm on edge. I'm quite passionate about it. I don't say I cried. Can't say I've cried at a game, but when I care about a team that I'm watching, I'm kind of tense,
If you and I went to, let's say Old Trafford together, yeah, and we're going to watch, and fans are back, and it's half time, it's nil all, you're a bit tense, and I say, come on, big fella, we're going to go and get something to eat. What is the Jamie Roberts half-time food from the vans around the back of a stadium? And forget your kind of I'm an athlete thing. I mean, proper food. None of this sort of lentil and protein stuff.
I'm a pulled pork. I'm a pulled pork.
I mean, are you a pie man? Are you a burger man?
Pulled pork and applesauce, I think, mate. In a row. Okay, yeah, that's quite good. I kind of go. I see past the burgers and the hot dogs. Go for the somewhat healthy.
Little bit of health.
Yeah.
And as a proud Welshman, I imagine that there is only one real song that would be your top song in terms of Mein Hen Vlad Fy Narai, the Welsh national anthem. Is that your favourite song to sing as a fan, or are there others that you love as well?
Probably, yeah. Obviously, the national anthem in Wales is a must see for any fan of sport, you know, rugby or not. To see that sung, full passionate crowd in Cardiff is a sight to behold. Certainly as a player, I was very fortunate to experience that. But as a supporter, it's very, very special. The other one I love is the Stone Roses have a song, This Is The One, that Man United, you know, yeah. Old Trafford, they belted out when Man United came out the tunnel. And I have a bit of a connection with that song. My brother's a massive Stone Roses fan. And it was a song that I always used to play coming in the coach when I was playing for Wales, coming down Westgate Street there into the stadium. We'd turn the corner, you know, the horses would link up with the coach, and I'd always play This Is The One in my ear. That was my, like, pre-match. Coming down Westgate Street, all the fans tapping the side of the bus or clapping. I always had This Is The One in my ear, and I just gave me goosebumps every time. And even still, when I've gone to Old Trafford and hear that, they still play it to this day, you know.
Was that your habit to have that Stone Roses song? You always tried to cue up the music so you'd have that coming in, almost like a charm.
I always have the same playlist, mate. Leaving the Vale. So going from the Vale all the way into town. Usually talk with a police escort, luckily. Usually talk about 22, 23 minutes, something like that. And, you know, you'd have a bit of Springsteen on there, you'd have a bit of house music. I always used to play the Verve, Lucky Man, which, you know, I love that song. And then, yeah, turn the corner, coming into Westgate Street, and, it'd be the Stone Roses, and This Is The One.
Absolutely fizzing and ready for action, I'd imagine. Now, this midpoint we have in the show, Loch Lomond's very kindly sponsored this podcast, as you know, and they're the spirit of the Open Golf Championship. And I want to ask you a few questions about golf. And I'm smiling because I know about you and golf, because you might be the only person in the world who is as bad as me on the golf course. And I remember in 2009, you and I scaring the locals, I think, by hitting some fairly errant shots and spraying it liberally all over the high veld. Specifically, have you ever been to the Open Golf Championship or a big tournament?
I have. So firstly, that is where we met, actually, wasn't it? Playing golf in a nine. Happy days.
Well, we didn't spend much time talking because we were our balls went in nowhere near the same direction.
Exactly over the fairways. I've been to a few. I was lucky to go to the Ryder Cup in 2010 when it was at Celtic Manor in Wales, a massive sporting event for Wales. I turned up on the Friday expecting to be there just for the day. I left on the Sunday. Because it rained off on the Friday, it rained off again on the Saturday, so that was a double header on the booze both those days. I ended up with Terry Matthews' black tie ball on the Saturday night, spinning Catherine Jenkins on the dance floor. And then the amazing thing about that Saturday, it's one of the most amazing things happened. So obviously absolutely pissed down all day, and it got to about 4 or 5 o'clock, and everyone went home. And then they made the decision that, you know, the clouds parted, the sun came out, and the golfers came out to play for about an hour at the end of the day. But everyone had gone home. And so you could stroll. I actually went the par 310th at Celtic Manor, actually went up to the tee box there with Martin Williams and Gethin Jones. We were there together in the hospitality, and we were the only ones on the tee box. And so Tiger Woods, Mickelson, they were all coming through and playing and stood within 10 feet.
Wonderful.
It was amazing. It was amazing. I guess I wouldn't have got the chance to do that if it hadn't rained and so forth. But so that was cool. And then my other worst memory from the golf course, I got invited to play in the Pro-Am at Wentworth in 2013-14. And You probably know Maria from the Lions. Maria got in touch, and I said to Maria, I said, look, obviously I'm playing in France. My clubs are back in Cardiff. So if I come and play in the Pro-Am, I was going to fly in on the morning. One, I need a buggy because I got a game on the weekend. I can't walk 6, 7, 8 miles around the golf course. I'll be knackered by the time the weekend comes. And two, obviously, because I'm 6'4", I need long clubs. Lo and behold, I'm on the tarmac, Charles de Gaulle, 7:15 in the morning, ready to fly into Heathrow, ready for the day. And Maria calls me and she's like, Jamie, unfortunately, there's no buggies at Wentworth and we've only got higher clubs, normal size. And so I spent the whole flight shitting myself. I get to Wentworth, I managed to blag a knee injury. Look, I had a medical degree. I knew what excuse to come up with to blag a knee injury to get a buggy. But mate, I had to play with normal sized clubs, and I kid you not, it was one of the worst days of my sporting life. I was swinging and missing the ball off the tee. I was probably a health hazard to the you know, you line up on green, and at the Pro-Am I went with, you've got hundreds of people. So if you know, in front of you, so if you spray the ball, there's a serious health hazard. I think I hit a few shins.
Do you think it was the loneliest sporting occasion you've ever been at?
It was,
were you in misery for most of the way around?
Most of the way. I was nervous about seriously harming someone. I couldn't pick up a golf club for 2 years after that. I couldn't do it. It was the most awful, awful sporting experience of my life. And so I've made.
Are you playing again? Have you started taking it up again?
I'm promising myself now, as you know, my career comes to a close. Hopefully, you know, I say hopefully, it might be another year or two. I'm going to make more effort on the golf course.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is an exclusive. Why don't you and I take lessons together? We're the same height, we're both useless, and we both know that we need to get better. So why don't we do lessons together?
It's a promise.
Done. Deal. Okay. Now, you've travelled all over the world with your rugby and also lived in many countries. Are there events or is there an event on your bucket list, sporting events that you've not been to that would absolutely love to go to?
The Olympics, one of my biggest regrets is not going to London in 2012. And I was actually in the UK. Like, I was playing in Cardiff and I just didn't seek out any sort of opportunity or find any place in the diary to go to London for any event. And so that's one of my biggest regrets, not going to the Olympics.
I would love to go to.
Yeah, just at the Olympic Games. I mean, it'd be amazing to do it away from home. So that's one. And then the night race Grand Prix in Singapore is one thing I want to do. Like, I'm quite a big fan of F1. I've been lucky to go to quite a few Grand Prix with Red Bull.
And you went as a kid, right? You were saying.
Yeah, exactly. I went as a kid. And then, you know, I was sponsored by Red Bull for a long time throughout my career and managed a few times at Monaco and Abu Dhabi and Monza. And, you know, I've travelled a bit with Formula One. But to go to Singapore in the night race would be pretty cool.
And you probably met a lot of sporting heroes, you know, through your job. Is there someone that you would love to meet that you've not just a pure? I mean, have you met Cantona, for instance? Did you ever get the chance to meet him?
You know what? I bumped into him in Marylebone in London, and I'm pretty sure, like, I asked him for a photo. He honestly looked at me like he was ready to kung fu kick me.
He looked at the size of you.
I did not want to be that guy. And I know, look, from being a Welsh rugby player in Wales, you have people come up to you and ask you for photos, and times when you want to get something done or you're on your way somewhere, it's like, right, okay, this is part of being a sportsman, it's what it's about. But with King Eric, man, he's got his flat cap on, he's walking down the pavement, I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to do this, but I might never get the chance again. So I asked him for a photo, he kindly obliged, but he's not smiling in the photo.
Did he give you, he's not loud, he gave you the look?
Yeah, he gave me the look, and I think he was probably desperately hungover. He certainly loved it. He looked very miserable, but c'est la vie.
Well, it doesn't matter. You c'est la vie. And you've he was a scary looking footballer. You're a giant centre, one of these breed of sort of big lads playing in the centre in the modern game. Who's the scariest player? And I know you're probably not allowed to admit being fearful, but is there been a player or players that you've played against in your career gone, Jesus Christ, either because they've kind of, they look scary or they're just mega massive or mega dirty and you think, oh, I really don't want to get involved in that. I'm dying to ask that one.
Look, I've come up against some big lads in my career in the midfield. You know, like Sean Davilliers, Marmonou, Sonny Bill Williams, Sterling Mortlock. I've played against the biggest. And it's not actually that scares me. It's the steppers that scare me. It's the short right. guys who can make you look very stupid on the pitch. You know, I've got no problem with, you know, big alpha male rugby players. You know, I'm quite a big bloke myself. So when it comes to the physical part of the game, I back myself. It's that Shane Williams-esque type of player. It was impossible to tackle. I mean, he's Cheslin Kolbe is another one. Played against him. You just can't lay a hand on the bloke.
And one of the great partnerships that had a little moment in your career was you playing with Brian O'Driscoll in 09 as a centre partnership. And I think you had to go home for the third test. Is that right, in 09?
Yeah, I didn't play in the third test. Yeah, I hit my wrist in the second test. Yeah, we both came off.
What was he like to play against? Would he have been in the tricky bugger category just because he's a small guy compared to you? I mean, he'd fit in your pocket, but a pretty talented player.
Yeah, short and steppy. But I think Brian was one of those guys, you know, we kind of clicked as a partnership. And some players, you find that. You read each other very well. And probably it was a massive learning curve for me playing with him at that age. Like, I was 22. 12 years ago. It feels like a long time ago. And the Lions are hopefully back in South Africa this year. Yeah. But my learning accelerated significantly under him. I'd only been a test midfielder for a year before that tour. And after coming off the back of it, I felt so comfortable in the test arena. And probably the biggest thing I took from him was his ability to communicate and communicate efficiently. So every call he'd make, it just seemed like the right call. There was no waffle. It was direct. It was precise. It was snappy. And I guess that's what experience buys you. But I learned that from him. You know, he's outstanding at it.
And who is the most natural talent you've ever seen on a rugby pitch that you've played with or against? Just pure natural talent. Maybe not the most successful in terms of caps or anything like that, but just someone who seemed to just have it all.
Not so much have it all, but most natural runner would be Shane Williams. I mean, I've obviously trained with the guy for a long time and I played with him for quite a long time throughout my Welsh career, but just had that ability to change a game on his own, and not many players can do that. You know, Carter was another one playing against the All Blacks who never quite knew what he was going to do. But, I mean, Shane, we get to games 55, 60, 65 minutes and you're losing the game, and it was a case of get the ball to Shane because this guy could change a game on his own. And I've not known anyone.
A bit like David Campese had done in his era. Same, just that ability to just conjure something out of nothing.
I'd definitely say Shane Williams.
Okay. Now, Jamie, we come to the part of the show which I think you'll enjoy the most, which I call the Captain's Broadside, where I ask you a bunch of sort of fairly random non-sporty questions and you just answer them as best you can. So you've come aboard this beautiful ship, which is made of fine Welsh oak. It's not English oak, it's Welsh oak, and there we are. And we can sail anywhere on this good earth, even with coronavirus restrictions. So where would you like us to take you on this voyage?
I am going to go to Hvar Island in Croatia.
Nice. Okay, we've not been to Croatia.
We've not sailed the blue waters of Croatia.
They're very clear, aren't they?
Oh, amazing place. Amazing part of the world. And there's some very fond memories there. Decent party. And just beautiful. Food's brilliant. Yeah, and, you know, sunsets, party, vibe is awesome.
I will speak to the navigator now. We'll be setting sail shortly. And as my guest at this beautiful table, I'll obviously feed you. I think it'll take us probably, a week or two to get down here from Cardiff. But the first night, you get to choose dinner. It's all yours. Three-course meal. I throw in cheese. That's not a course. You'll just get a full plate of cheese at some point. You're not training for anything. So what is the Jamie Roberts three-course dinner that I can get the chef to start preparing?
Right, we're going to start with a caprese salad, but with peach as well. So we'll go mozzarella, tomato, peach. which I had actually in Italy, and I thought was amazing. And just added a little bit of sweetness to it. Then for Maine, it's hard to argue. Côte de Bœuf, medium rare, with gratin dauphinois potatoes. I will go for peppercorn sauce and a side of spinach. For dessert, I'll have a...
Very good. And pudding?
Apple crumble with custard, mate. I'll keep it homely.
That is delicious. Proper food. No mucking about there. You also get the most beautiful ensuite cabin, which has got a power shower, which is unlikely. I know it's a pirate ship, but you'll go along. What are you going to sing in the shower? I mean, I know you love your music. We're both Springsteen fans, but what are you going to sing in the shower for the crew?
Although I'd left Wales and we're on our way to Croatia, I would sing probably Tom Jones, mate. I'm a Tom Jones fan. Tom Jones, Green Grass at Home, to remind me of home.
Like all good Welshmen, you get homesick the moment you leave Wales. That's just the way. And mate, what was your first ever album? Do you remember?
My first album? God, that's a good question. I think it was the E17 album. E17 on cassette, right. Funnily enough. It was either that or it was... E17, or it was the Manic Street Preachers, This Is My Truth, Tell Me Yours, on CD. That was my first CD. E17 Steam, yeah. Cassette. And then, yeah, Manic Street Preachers, This Is My Truth, which are fantastic.
And do you remember your first ever live gig?
My first live gig, I think, from memory, my dad took us to the beautiful South in Bristol. When we were much younger. I mean, Beautiful South was the sort of music my parents wonderful. Played in the car when we went on our family holiday.
Car journey music.
Like, I think everyone would agree. You know, children of the 90s, the Beautiful South was common in most cars. And my dad took us to one of those gigs. I remember seeing those guys in Bristol.
Pretty impressive, though, I imagine. Good musicians.
Oh yeah, impressive. And I saw Paul Heaton and Jackie Abbott actually play a few years ago. They played in what is that music venue? What's the music venue now? Just off the M4 coming into London there, just on the right.
Hammersmith. Yeah, that's good. And what was your first car?
My first car was a Rover 100 Knightsbridge. So it wasn't a Rover 100 kind of Metro. It was one up, little kind of special edition.
And what colour was it?
Navy. I shared it with my brother when we first passed. You know, I passed my driving test when I was 17. My brother had already passed, and we had to share the car.
And what did the Knightsbridge have in the model? What was the upgrade from the basic model? Do you think?
I don't think it had a choker. I just don't think it had a choker, which a lot of the other models did.
And a lot of people have compared you to JPR because you're both doctors, you know, these sort of talented people who've got half a brain and a decent rugby ability. Do you have another hidden talent people don't know about? Can you do anything else? Do you play the guitar? I think you do, don't you?
Yeah, I play the guitar, only socially. But yeah, I love my music.
You like singing, don't you?
Yeah, I don't mind singing, but... Yeah, look, the guitar is a hobby of mine. It's difficult to find time to play it now. I'm pretty busy, but I think in another life I'd want to be part of a kind of band or play music on stage of some sort.
Do you like Springsteen's new album, Letter to You?
I just love his old stuff, mate, to be honest. Just the anthems. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, me too. That's in fact all I ever want to be is just to be part of the E Street Band. I'll do anything. I'll play the triangle, but that's all I want to do. Now, final question, Jamie. We're sailing down to Croatia. It'll take a couple of weeks, but it's a pirate ship. We can smuggle anything on board because we're designed for it. Do you have a possession or something that you've acquired along your life that we can keep safe and put in a chest and bury so that you know it's safe for all times? Or are you not an acquisitive type of person?
I won't include my dog in this because I wouldn't want to bury my dog while she's alive.
No, that would be probably, wrong. I will get arrested.
Exactly. I've got some cool jerseys, which, you know, remind me of kind of the highlights of my rugby career. But I also collect watches, and, you know, I've bought watches down the years that remind me of big moments in my career and my life. And so they're some of my best memories. You know, I wear those watches on my wrist. They remind me of those times in my life. And yeah, my watch collection is pretty precious to me.
Okay, well, we'll put those very... How many do you have?
Ooh, almost 20.
Wow. Okay, well, we can put those in the chest. We'll lock them up very safely. Jamie Roberts, I could go on for ages, but we've got 2 weeks on board together. I can bore you to death, so I should let the listeners go at least. You've been a wonderful guest, and I should admit to everybody as well is that Jamie very kindly did this a year ago when he was living in South Africa, but with COVID and whatever, he agreed to come on the show, and it's a real joy to see you, and for all the joy you gave. I think there are some players who gave great joy, obviously, if you're a Welsh rugby fan, but also there are some players who transcend that, and I think you're definitely one of those who have given people a lot of joy. So wishing you the best of luck for the rest of your career at the Dragons. As you know, this is a classy pirate ship, and so we're also going to leave you with our own special type of treasure, which is a bottle of the 12-year-old single malt whiskey from our friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. And Jamie, thank you for coming on the show, and very best of luck for the rest of this year.
Charles, top man. Thank you. See you in Havar.
Yes, absolutely. Cheers out.
Top man.
Well, that was Jamie Roberts, Dr. Jamie Roberts, a true Renaissance man of rugby and a lovely, lovely fella. To all our listeners, we're so grateful for your support of the show, and we don't want you to leave with your cellars empty either. So our kind friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies are very kindly once again giving away a bottle of their 12-year-old single malt whiskey. To be in with a chance of winning this bottle, head over to their Twitter page at Loch Lomond Malts and follow their instructions to enter. From all my colleagues at Are You Not Entertained and Loch Lomond Whiskies, thank you for your support for the shows that we make, and we're so grateful for your time. If you get a chance, please tell your friends about us, and also get them to find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts by searching Are You Not Entertained. If you want to follow me or get in touch, you can do so on Twitter at GilesMorgan71 or via email if you want to tell me how much you like the show or otherwise, at giles@gilesdmorgan.com. So until we meet again, make sure you scrape the barnacles off your hull, coil your ropes neatly, and never, ever feed the seagulls when you are at sea. Goodbye.